You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, especially binge eating disorders. And I am here to help you break free from binging, guilt, shame, body shame, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. How would that be? If you'd like to call in with questions, the number into the show is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. If you are also on Instagram, because I live stream on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment or a question in the comment box. So I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. It is not what you are eating that is the problem. It is why. And I am here to help you identify that and find new ways of responding to yourself so that eventually you can wake up and think about your day, not your diet. So give me a call, drop a comment in Instagram, and let's find a way to banish binging for good. And yes, that is possible. So today I'm going to talk about emotional eating versus binge eating. So check this out. Annabelle told me she had binged on cookies after a tough day at work. How many cookies did Annabelle had? She had 6 cookies. Bethany also said that she totally binged on cookies. How many cookies did Bethany have in that binge? A whole box of Oreos and part of a second box. So at least 60 cookies. So although both of these women thought that they had binged, Annabelle had actually done some emotional eating, where Bethany was the one who actually binged. Hi, Carly Gash on Instagram. Good to see you here. So binge eating and emotional eating are terms that are often used interchangeably as if they're the same thing. So let's look at emotional eating versus binge eating to understand what those terms actually stand for and why you should care about the difference. Someone on Instagram is saying, can diets start this problem? I binge after restrictive diets. Absolutely. That is one reason for binging. Deprivation, or the anticipation of deprivation, which is what a diet is, that leads to you wanting what you can't have psychologically. And also, when we are too deprived, we get hungry, or if we don't eat enough during the day, we get so hungry that we end up binging. That's the physiological reason for binging, and it's not the main reason for binging. I'm going to get to that in a little bit, but that's why it's called the diet binge cycle, right? Diets lead to binging. So that's why the first chapter in my book is called Ditch Dieting. So important to stop dieting for a number of reasons. Okay, so emotional eating, as the term suggests, is eating in response to your emotion. Sometimes we want to avoid our emotions. We don't want to feel painful, upsetting emotions. We're really good at avoiding those emotions, but we don't know how to respond to those emotions, so we turn to food. So emotional eating really means eating to change the way you emotionally feel, the way you feel psychologically, not to assuage physical hunger. For example, have you ever got that sudden urge to eat ice cream after a disappointment, a hard day, or a breakup? We see that happening in movies all the time. There is actually an ice cream flavor called bad breakup. Crazy, but true. Maybe not so crazy. Anyway, so it's because we seek comfort when we're upset, if we don't know how to comfort ourselves with words, and when the very existence of the fact that we need comfort because we're feeling something is said to be weak in our culture, right? We're weak if we have feelings and we're strong if we push them away. Actually, it's the reverse. It takes a lot of strength to process difficult emotions. So we seek comfort when we feel sad, when we're upset, when we're lonely, all of those things. And creamy foods like ice cream are associated with comfort and soothing. You can learn more about that if you get my food mood formula secret. It is in my bio, and the website's in my bio. let me actually finish the sentence. If you want the food mood formula secret, head on over to my bio on Instagram and click the link, and you will find a link to get it. If you are listening to this on the radio, if this is a radio show broadcast for you, then just go to my website, drninainc.com, and you can download it there. So this is just one example of emotional eating, like, oh, bad breakup, bad day, where's the ice cream? The reasons behind emotional eating go way, way beyond this. This is really just the surface. It's what's obvious. So at night, you might turn to food because you're bored or lonely, or maybe you're actually lonely and you think you're bored. That's very common. You might suddenly want to eat something while you're watching a TV show or a movie. You may wander into the kitchen after dinner, even though you're not hungry and you don't even know why you're doing it. You just can't stop. In each of these cases, there is a situational trigger, and food is a way of coping. If you're lonely at night, loneliness feels like emptiness within us, right? We feel a void. If you're lonely at night, food can symbolically fill that void. Reading or watching TV can activate uncomfortable feelings that are associated with that book or that TV show or that movie. A lot of times we are reading, we're watching TV, something's going on, and we don't realize we're being triggered. And then we end up just feeling like, you know, ice cream is calling our name, and we think the problem is ice cream, but actually ice cream is the solution to the problem, which is whatever got stirred up within us as we're watching a show. This just happened with a patient of mine. I talk a lot about Jenna and how she said Ben and Jerry's was calling her name, and she was watching a show called Charmed, had to do with the sisters fighting, and they, before she was even consciously aware that she was triggered because she had her own sister stuff, she went to ice cream for comfort and distraction. I was just talking with someone the other day, and she said, oh my God, I don't know what it is. I just had to, like, you know, I just needed bread right at that moment. Well, she was watching a show that when we deconstructed it, it was also about family, about this close family, and she was not consciously aware that she was being triggered by watching this heartwarming show, but it made her feel the loss of her own family because she was away from them and not such a great relationship with them. And so eating bread actually helped her fill the void, the emptiness, the psychological emptiness within. But she didn't know she was doing it. She was just like, oh my God, I can't stop eating bread. So bread and other filling foods are associated with filling a void symbolically. So bread's your thing, cake, pizza, pasta, anything that takes up space within you and you can't stop eating it. And maybe you eat until you're so full you can't believe how full you are, but you keep on eating, then there's a reason. You want to be a real detective of your mind and look at, why is that? What's going on? Debbie goes for ice cream. Okay, so ice cream is associated with comfort. So Debbie, and anyone who's listening to this who can relate to Debbie's pull towards the ice cream, the key is to find new ways of comforting yourself that don't involve ice cream. So let me ask you this. If a friend was upset. Something was bothering her or him. And they really needed some comfort. Would you say, I know just what to do. Let's order ice cream. Or I got ice cream in the freezer. Or let's go to Baskin Robbins. Let's go to Jenny's if you're in Calabasas like I am. Oh, Jenny's has fabulous ice cream. Would you say that? Or would you say, I'm so sorry, and talk to your friend? We talk about comfort food, but comfort food really means a wish to be comforted by somebody else. And if we don't know how to comfort ourselves, of course not, Debbie. Debbie would not say like, you're suffering. Hey, here's the Haagen-Dazs. No, you would talk to your friend. And the idea is to treat yourself the same way you treat your friend, to respond to yourself the way you would respond to a friend. And often people who struggle with food are super nice to everybody else. Supportive, warm, encouraging, loving. And yet when it comes to themselves, super harsh. Debbie, does that resonate with you? Are you one way to other people and another way to you? I'm guessing yes. When we learn to be different towards ourselves, when we learn to comfort ourselves with words, in the right words, then we, Debbie's like, yep, that's me. And I bet a lot of people who are listening or watching this right now can relate to that, because we often treat others in a loving way, but we hate on ourselves. We're mean to ourselves. We're hard to ourselves. We're critical. We're judgmental. We're super harsh. We're mean girls or bully boys to ourselves. And then you know what? We use food to get away from our own mean voice. Beverly is saying, your book made me realize that I used to binge at the vending machine at work at 3 a.m. because I was bored, but I was really lonely. I wanted to fill and distract myself. But then she started overeating on vegetables. Okay, because food doesn't actually solve the problem. It takes you away from the problem. So the problem is loneliness. There are only two ways to resolve loneliness. And eating a lot of vegetables or anything in the vending machine doesn't resolve loneliness. It symbolically fills the void within you, but it doesn't actually resolve the problem. It's a solution to the problem temporarily. The way to resolve loneliness is, there are two ways to resolve loneliness. Connect with a person or people, the right people, because we all know the worst loneliness is being with people and still feeling lonely. Isn't that just the worst? That's awful. There is no more horrible loneliness than feeling lonely when you're in a group of people. So it's finding the right people. But if it is 3 a.m. and nobody is around and you can't call someone up and talk with them, or maybe you don't have anyone that you can really trust to fill your soul in that moment or ever, then the second solution when you find yourself to be lonely is to convert loneliness into solitude. Loneliness is just to be totally alone with no other person or part of yourself that can be really present. Solitude is when you are alone with a supportive, loving, kind, compassionate part of yourself. So if you are lonely and no one is around for you, cultivate a kind, supportive voice for you. Because then you're always with a friend and you're never lonely. Okay. So also, if you're bored, boredom means you need something to do. And we often confuse loneliness for boredom. We think we're bored. We're actually lonely, or we're empty. We're unfulfilled. There's something in our life that is a void, something that is not just fulfilling. Even the language, look at the language. Like, it's not satisfying. It's not fulfilling. I'm not talking about food. I'm talking about whatever's missing in your life. But it's the same word. We use the same words for food and for like emotional fulfillment. And sometimes eating is the thing that you can do when you're bored, because what happens is, especially at night, when we are alone with ourselves, Debbie, you're trying to fill an empty void. So as hard as this may seem to you, the key is to really recognize, really drill down and look at, what is that void? What is the void that you are trying to fill? Because once you know what it is, then you can take steps to resolve it in some way. When we don't want to look at it, we don't want to see it, we don't want to recognize it, we just want to go, no. What's in the kitchen? Right? We never solve the problem. We temporarily solve the problem with food, but we don't actually solve it for good. And that's why it keeps coming back. So Debbie, I really encourage you to fearlessly look at, what is that void? Because if you can name it, you can change it. You could take steps to fill it. So it's hard to be with ourselves especially at night, when we start having feelings and thoughts about things we don't want to think about, we don't want to feel, because we don't know how to respond to ourselves. Because we live in a culture that says, just be happy, be grateful, don't feel anything bad, you're fine, you should be happy for what you have. Don't feel bad about anything, ever. It's basically what our culture says, but we don't live in that world where we're happy, happy, happy all the time and just grateful. No, we live in a real world. We live in a real world where stuff happens to us. And if we get into a car accident, someone rear-ends us, or we rear-end someone else, and we're not supposed to be like, at least we have a car. Some people don't have cars, so we should just be grateful that we have a car. Oh. So Debbie has the loss of a relationship with her husband. That's a very painful, painful void, Debbie. I am so sorry. And food represents people. Food represents relationships. So it sounds like your husband got ill, and you don't have as much of a relationship with him, and that's leaving a terrible void in your soul. And so that means you have to be extra nice to yourself. You might not be able to change that relationship, but you can change the way you respond to your feelings about it, which will change how you feel. I'm so sorry. It's really hard to suffer that kind of a loss. It's very painful. Of course, you feel the void. And you are finding a new way of being with that emptiness, being with that pain, being with whatever else it is that you are feeling. And you will not always feel this way forever. Right now, it's super hard. But you are going through a process, and you will not always feel this way. Right now, it sucks. I am so sorry. Yeah. And by the way, that's how we respond to ourselves. Yes, Carly Gash is saying, I'm so sorry, Debbie, this is very sad. Yes, it's very sad. And, you know, sadness or anger or anxiety or any feeling is just, oh, you're welcome, Debbie. I'm happy to give you the live and the love. She said, thanks for the live. I was like, oh, because I'm live on Instagram. Both of them work. You're welcome for the love and the live. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to do the live and bring the love. So at night, we are often aware of the thoughts and the feelings that we do not want to recognize during the day. That is when those thoughts creep in. During the day, we're busy. We're doing stuff. We're working. We're taking care of kids. We're taking care of life. We're busy, busy, busy. And then at night, things slow down. And that's when these thoughts can start coming in. That's when these feelings can start coming in. If you don't know how to be with yourself in a loving way, food is going to show you the love. It's going to distract you. It's going to make you focus on something else. It's going to give you something to do, which also reminds me, for many people who are always taking care of other people, they're there for their mother, their father. I'm thinking of Jenny, who often calls the show, whose mother basically wants Jenny to be her mother, take care of her. And then she's taking care of, you know, others and working and taking care of people. And it's all giving, 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 giving. You give to other people. And if you don't give yourself love and you're not getting it, food takes care of you. And eating can be me time. It's just you and whatever you're eating. It's just a little respite from the storm. And sometimes that is why you are eating. So remember that if it feels like you are triggered by food, no. It sure feels like that. You might feel like a food addict. You might feel like you have totally no willpower, no control. You might feel like it's absolutely about food. Like Jenna, who's like, you know, Ben and Jerry's is calling my name. Calling my name. I'm a food addict, she tells me. No. P.S. When she worked through her sister stuff and when she learned new ways of comforting herself about this bad relationship with her sister, which did not change. The relationship did not change. But she changed how she felt about it. And she found new ways of responding to herself when she was upset. Ben and Jerry stopped calling her name. And she no longer felt like a food addict. So you are not triggered by food, even though it sure feels like it. You are triggered by some situation, some emotion, some conflict, some thought, some belief. Something is triggering you. And it's causing an uncomfortable feeling that you may or may not be aware of. And boom, eating is the answer. So emotional eating is not a clinically diagnosable eating disorder. It's just an umbrella term that kind of refers to using food for reasons other than eating because you're hungry. If you eat when you're stressed, when you're bored, when you're angry, when you're upset, that's a sign of emotional eating. So hopefully that clarifies. So is binge eating the same as emotional eating? Binge eating is a clinically diagnosable and treatable eating disorder. In fact, binge eating disorder is the most prevalent common eating disorder there is. It's said to impact like 3 million people, but the real number is way more than that because many people who struggle with binge eating don't realize they have a clinically diagnosable and treatable eating disorder. They think they're food addicts. They have no willpower. They think they have no control. No, they're wrong. They actually have an eating disorder. Oh, Debbie, I am so glad that you are reading my book and loving it. Yay. Oh, here, let me, where is my book? Oh, I was going to just like shamelessly share my book. Oh, here it is. The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. Debbie is reading it and loving it. And I get so many comments from people who are reading it and loving it or have read it. And it's helped them really change their lives, which makes me feel so incredibly happy. So if you haven't gotten it, get yours too. It's available on Amazon in paperback, hardcover, Kindle, and Audible, which I read, so I will read it to you. Okay, so binge eating disorder, the likely number of the people who have binge eating disorder is, I think, millions more than what is reported because so many people don't even realize it and they're too ashamed to get help. They think there's something wrong with them. No, there is nothing wrong with them. And it is not about willpower. And it is not about control. And it is not even about food. It is a way of coping. I call it a frenemy. It is a friend in that it helps you in some way. It does something for you. It helps you feel comforted. It helps you escape, you know, that numb zone that you go into, the binge zone, the dead zone, like I've heard it called so many different things. It helps you cope, comfort yourself, even helps you celebrate. If you don't know other ways of celebrating, it can also be that too. It symbolically fills a void. If you eat so much that you're actually in physical pain, it's an unconscious way of turning emotional pain to physical pain. There are so many ways that it is a friend to you temporarily. It's a bad friend because it also, of course, hurts you. It hurts your body. It hurts your self-esteem. It hurts your sense of self. It is much more of an enemy than a friend. So binge eating is a way of coping with emotions, but it also involves eating a greater amount of food than emotional eating, along with more self-recrimination and blame and shame. So remember how I said, like one person said, oh, I have just binged. I ate 6 cookies. Oh, and the other person ate more like 60 cookies. That was a binge. Both are emotional eating. So binge eating is a form of emotional eating, but emotional eating is not always binging. And people binge for so many reasons, including denying, avoiding, enacting painful or upsetting thoughts, emotions, and conflicts. Check this out. Imagine that you're mad at somebody, but you don't want to be mad at them. And you tell yourself, what's the point of being mad at them? Or I shouldn't be mad at them. Or it's not fair of me to be mad at them. So you go and you eat a bunch of chips. You know, anything with a bite is associated with forms of anger, frustration, irritation, annoyance, rage. You know, there's a whole spectrum of anger. And then you get mad at yourself for what you ate or what the scale says the next day. So now you deny that you're angry at another person, but you sure have no problem taking out that anger on yourself. That is enacting emotions. So with binge eating and emotional eating, food is used as a source of comfort, distraction, or to numb painful, angry, anxious, difficult emotions. And by the way, the clinical diagnosis of binge eating disorder means that you binge, eat way more than you would normally eat, whatever normally is, but you know, the expected amount of food that a person would eat in a short amount of time. You feel tremendous shame and guilt, and it happens at least 3 times a week over a period of 3 months. It's usually more like years. Most people who come to see me, they have struggled with this for decades. Decades. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, even 60 years. I treat people and have actually a few people in their 70s who've struggled with it since they were kids. It's never too late to change. So no matter how long you have struggled, by the way, no matter how long food has been your best friend and your worst enemy at once, frenemy, there is hope for change. You can change your relationship with food by changing your relationship with yourself. And also with binge eating, there is a high degree of shame. Just absolute shame, guilt, embarrassment, mortification, actually. Okay, so again, how do you know if it's binge eating? So if you're eating a large amount of food in a short amount of time, if you eat way past full, even to the point of physical pain, by the way, if that's the case, think about what kind of emotional pain that you are in that you might be converting to to physical pain, unbeknownst to yourself. You can't stop thinking about food. It's the first thing you think of when you get up in the morning, and it's the last thing you think about at night, and you think about it all day. Maybe you avoid social gatherings because you can't trust yourself around food, or you don't want people to see you eat, or you feel so self-conscious that you don't want to be around other people and eat in front of them. And sometimes it doesn't even matter what you are eating. You just can't stop. You're just like, why am I eating this dry oatmeal? It's disgusting and I can't stop. That's binge eating. And you feel shame, guilt, and remorse afterwards. It feels like an addiction. If you've ever gone into your trash because you threw away food so you wouldn't eat it, but then you go back to the trash later and dig it out and eat it then, that's binge eating. It's not that you lack willpower or control. You are trying to help yourself in some way. And even though it feels compulsive, even though it feels like it's about food, it's not. Something is going on within you that is unbearable, that you can't look at or feel or cope with. And food is the solution. So should you be worried about emotional eating? Well, you know, every once in a while, we all have that, you know, bad breakup ice cream, or that, oh, I've had a hard day, I want some ice cream, or, oh, I just, you know, I need comfort food. Give me the mac and cheese. I mean, every once in a while, we have that, but we don't eat it necessarily to excess. Every once in a while, we have food for other reasons than feeling hungry. That's very human. But if it is a habitual response to anything that causes you anguish, anything that's uncomfortable, anything that's painful, if it's a habitual response to you, then it's a problem. You're not a problem. The behavior is a problem. So if you frequently turn to food without even enjoying the taste, and you think, like, what's wrong with me? I can't stop. What's wrong with me? If you have mastered so many other areas in your life and you feel like you're competent and smart, you got it going on, but this area you just can't get a handle on, then your behavior needs your attention. Your behavior needs your attention. You've got to look at, well, why am I doing this? Instead of, what's wrong with me? Get a grip. I'm terrible. I have no willpower. Oh, Beverly is asking, I don't believe in Overeaters Anonymous. Oh, hell no. Let me break this down. In fact, I'm glad you asked. Listen, let me find a pen. Pen that will show up. I do not believe in Overeaters Anonymous. I do not believe it in it. I think it causes more harm than good. I would go as far as to say I'm severely against OA. So I don't know if this will show up, but I'm going to draw these two circles. Okay? Two circles. Each of these circles represent you. If you say, I'm a binge eater, I'm an overeater, I have no control over food. First of all, how are you going to feel? You're going to feel terrible. You're going to feel awful. But it's also your identity. When you speak in that way, it's your identity. It's you. There's no separation. And then you're constantly talking about, thinking about food, thinking about willpower, trying to be good. OA will absolutely mess you up, because it tells you not to eat things. It focuses on what you are eating and not why. So this is OA. This is any kind of thing that where you say, hey, I'm the problem. I'm a binge eater. I'm an emotional eater. I have no control over food. No, we don't like that. Bad that. No. Blech. Okay. This is you also, this circle. And for those of you who are listening this, I just drew two circles, very perfectly imperfect, as we all are. And when you say, I am it, I drew a nasty squiggly yuck in the center of one of the circles. And that represents like that sense of identity, as if it's your identity. So here's another circle, perfectly imperfect. And here is, you know, binging or emotional eating or whatever. I'm drawing it outside the circle with an arrow pointing to it, because it is something that you are struggling with. It is something that you are dealing with. It is a behavior that you are doing for a reason. It is not your identity, and it is not about willpower, and is not about control, and it is not about white sugar, flour, or any of the things that people tell you it's about. No. You are perfectly imperfect. You are whatever you are. Smart, creative, thoughtful, kind, funny, witty, whatever, hardworking, dynamic, thoughtful, whatever it is, that's you. This isn't you. This is just something you're doing. Beverly, I hope that helps. And anyone else who can relate to that, I hope it helps. Because no, you are not binge eating. I am preaching it. I am. And please preach the message out there. Tell your friends, because so many people are out there saying, oh, what's wrong with me? And then they go to these 12-step programs and they feel worse about themselves. And then it all becomes, oh, this is what I ate and this is what I didn't eat. No. What's eating at you? That's what I want you to focus on. That is the key to change. So food is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem. The problem is whatever. You're welcome, Beverly. I'm glad you asked too, because I think that is going to help a lot of people. Every time I do that, people are like, oh my God, really? Yes, really. You are not binge eating, and you are not powerless. You may feel powerless, but it's not about power. When you cultivate new ways of being with yourself, everything changes. Okay. So you might want to ask yourself, what problem is this solving? If you feel like Ben and Jerry's is calling your name, what am I feeling right now? Is it anger, sadness, loneliness? What's going on with me? Because the only way to get rid of emotional eating, binge eating, any kind of unhappy, unhealthy relationship with food, the only way to stop is to find new ways of responding to yourself instead of turning to food. So emotional eating, it's basically an umbrella term for any kind of problematic eating that relates to emotions. And when food is the way that you cope with the difficulties of life, emotional eating comes into play. That's what it is. Binge eating disorder is a form of emotional eating. And it is a very specific and diagnosable and treatable form of emotional eating. All emotional eating, all problematic eating is treatable. Let me just clarify that. So if you struggle with food and you feel hopeless, if you feel embarrassed, if you feel shame and mortified, if you're worried you are never going to feel quote unquote normal around food, it's important to know this. You learned this way of being with yourself. You learned how to respond to yourself in this way. You learned to use food, and you can learn a different way. You can learn a different way of being with yourself, with your emotions, with your ambitions, with your friendships, with your interactions, with your relationships, everything. You can learn a new way. Because when you find a new way, when you find a way to identify why, express yourself in a different way, and then respond to yourself in a way that's helpful. And when you focus on that instead of focus on what you're eating, when you create those healthier responses to your emotions, everything will change. And it changes without thinking about calories, carbs, fat grams, about macros at all. You don't even have to think about food. In fact, so many people that I treat, my patients in my clinical private practice and my clients in my coaching programs, they'll tell me things like, you know, like I realized I thought my pants were getting looser. Like I thought they got stretched out in the laundry or something. But then, you know, they go to the doctor and the doctor's like, you know, you've lost like 30 pounds since you were last here. And they're just like, really? Like losing weight without even realizing it. And then you keep it off because you've totally changed the way you relate to yourself. That's the difference between being in recovery and being liberated. So in recovery, which, you know, is also a term that I have an issue with, we recover from a bad breakup. We recover from a financial setback. We recover from an illness. We don't recover from binge eating disorder or anything like that. We actually liberate ourselves. We don't say like, I'm in recovery from anxiety. I'm in recovery from depression. No, we don't say that. You say like, I was anxious and now I'm good. I've learned how to manage my anxiety and I'm good. I was depressed. I struggled with depression, but not anymore. I feel great. We don't say I'm in recovery from depression. No. Now I realize that depression is a state. Anxiety is a state and binge eating is a behavior, but it comes from a state. It comes from a way of being. So being in recovery means I'm always going to have to think about this for the rest of my life. Like I was thinking like Eeyore. And someone just said that to me yesterday. She's like, I know I'm going to have to deal with this for the rest of my life, right? No. Hell no. No. Who wants that? Who wants every day to think about food? That's not even recovery. That's focusing on the wrong thing. Liberation means you've found new ways of being with yourself. They work. They feel second nature. At first, it's hard to be different towards yourself, but eventually it becomes second nature. And then you don't even think about food as a way of coping because you have a new way of coping that really works well. And then you're liberated. Then binge eating was something you used to do, but it's not something that you think about anymore. And that is possible. Now, a lot of you may know this, but for those of you who don't, why do I do this work? Because I struggled with every eating disorder there was and basically started worrying about my food and weight when I was 5 years old. That was the beginning of my descent into eating disorder madness. And by the time I was a teenager, literally every page of every journal from those times is filled with numbers. Calories I ate, calories I burned, the weight I was going to be. You know, I tracked everything, every fat gram, every carb, every calorie, every whatever. It absolutely took over my life. And then I went to therapy in college for anxiety. And I talked about guys and goals and family and dream and dreams and friends. And just, I talked about all the things except whatever was happening with food because I was too embarrassed to talk to my therapist about my behavior with food. And I was the poster child for eating disorders. I would restrict, then I would binge and purge, and then I would binge, and then I would restrict, binge and purge. It went in this cycle. I was too mortified to talk about it with my therapist, but by the time I left treatment, hold on, Carly Gash, all my eating disorders were gone for good, liberation, because I changed the way I related to myself. I turned my inner critic into a friend. I learned new ways of coping. That's what changed my life forever. That's why I do this work. That's why I'm adamant to tell you there is hope, but the problem is not food. The problem is your relationship with you. Hi, Carly Gash. I only have about 5 minutes left in the show. What's going on?
Hi, Dr. Nina. Yes, very quickly. So I was going to call you before when show started and this is what I want to discuss with you. I rarely start things right away. You know, I say, okay, I will start. Sometimes I start right away, but this problem of dragging my feet before starting, like calling you, and then I digressed, I washed like glasses, and then when I said, hold on, I forgot something. I said, I forgot calling Dr. Nina, how I was going to. And then I'm like, oh, shoot, it's only like 5 minutes left. But I know, Dr. Nina, that I'm doing it subconsciously, leaving it till the last moment when 5 minutes left. So maybe I don't work on it, or I don't say much, or I don't say the most important thing. So this is what I think about it. And I also notice that I don't give myself priority in terms of, yes, I can start this. Why not? Why not be rich? Why not start relationships I like? And I notice that because in my family, I'm very fast. I'm very like smart, but they used to hold me back. Like this past week, I'm thinking about them and how they raised me. Thank God right now, I'm clearly seeing that they were only using me, like my aunts and uncles, for their benefit. They use like child labor, you know, like for different, oh my God, just a ray of humiliation. And then being an adult and seeing like, oh, if you want to use a child for your own benefit and you're not interested in their development and growth as a healthy adult or to the best of your understanding, adult contributing to their growth, of course, you're not going to raise them well. And they would never prioritize me. So I would say this. They would give me a little bit growth, just enough so I bring those resources back to them, or they will teach me just enough so I work in their business, but not enough so I can be independent and grown up and do those things for myself. You know, like a little bit of slavery mentality. So I guess I just found my answer, Dr. Nina. Thank you.
Sounds like you knew the answer the whole time, and that this is a real identification with how you were treated, but you're recognizing it. And you know, we procrastinate for different reasons. We procrastinate because we don't want to have an experience that we are in conflict about. We procrastinate because we're afraid of failure. We procrastinate because we're afraid of success. There are many reasons why we might procrastinate, but what's important is that you stay curious, not critical, which is what I just heard. That was a lot of curiosity and reflection. And when we are curious, we find the answers. And then once you have the answer, then you can set about a plan to, okay, how am I going to address this? But nice job of self-reflection, Carly.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. And the how I'm going to address it, would you say that I recognize it. Now I need to acknowledge. I don't have many feelings about it anymore because I've mourned this for like good of several years. Right now, I just want to practice recognizing it, seeing it, and like the next step actually helping myself and say, oh, they didn't teach me enough. Well, it happened in the past, but now I'm going to teach myself enough, or like to the extent needed, or I'm going to reach the goals I want to reach instead of just doing as much so they can benefit from it. So I guess I'm just going to be on my own site. I don't know how to do it yet, honestly, Dr. Nina, but I will keep doing it.
I think you're on a good path. And I would also say, and I do not have to treat myself the way I was treated to feel psychologically attached to my parents or, you know, to my family. So like to remind yourself also, like, you can differentiate and be your own self without having to stay connected psychologically to your family by being like them to you. So
thank you. I like this very much, Dr. Nina. Not be psychologically attached. Yeah, I think I'm ready to detach from them completely. Thank you very much. It feels so good. I feel more liberated.
I love it.
Scared, like, I have mixed feelings, but more liberated.
More liberated sounds fantastic. Hold that in your heart this week, and just keep up the good work of being curious, not critical. And actually, That is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio. You can also listen later because the show is made on LA Talk Radio and live streamed on Instagram. And you can also listen later on Apple Podcasts and anywhere where you get your podcast. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. There are 5 years worth of episodes. Sam, can you believe I've been here for 5 years? More than 5 years. I can't even believe it. But there are 5 years of shows that you can listen to. And if you love the show, please take a moment and leave a rating and even better, a review. Because the more people that leave ratings and reviews, the more it shows up in searches, the more that I can help people. And that you, with your questions, are also helping you as well. So Debbie, Beverly, Carly Gash, and everyone else who was here on Instagram, thank you for your questions. Have a wonderful week. Stay curious next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.